die within the year and tells himself it is not true, and he will live forever. They go about, he said, without looking at the world. When other traders returned, they repeated the tale that Narvedouin had become a poor land and had lost the arts of wizardry. But all this was mere tales of the Reach, which are always strange, and only my father gave it much thought. Then in the new year, in the festival of the lambs that we hold in Henlat, when the shepherds' wives come into the city bringing the firstlings of the flocks, my father named the wizard Root to say the spells of increase over the lambs. But Root came back to our hall distressed and laid his staff down and said, "My lord, I cannot say the spells." My father questioned him, but he could say only, "I have forgotten the words and the patterning." So my father went to the marketplace and said the spells himself, and the festival was completed. But I saw him come home to the palace that evening, and he looked grim and weary, and he said to me, "I said the words, but I do not know if they had meaning." And indeed, there's trouble among the flocks this spring, the ewes dying in birth, and many lambs born dead, and some are deformed. The boy's easy, eager voice dropped. He winced as he said the word and swallowed. "I saw some of them," he said. There was a pause. My father believes that this matter and the tale of Narvedouin show some evil at work in our part of the world. He desires the counsel of the wise.
"That he sent you proves that his desire is urgent," said the Archmage. "You are his only son, and the voyage from Enlad to Roke is not short. Is there more to tell?"
"Only some old wives' tales from the hills."
"What do the old wives say?"
"That all the fortunes witches read in smoke and water pools tell of ill, and that their love potions go amiss."
"But these are people without true wizardry."
"Fortune-telling and love potions are not of much account, but old women are worth listening to."
"Well, your message will indeed be discussed by the masters of Roke. But I do not know, Arryn, what counsel they may give your father, for Enlad is not the first land from which such tidings have come."
Arryn's trip from the north, down past the great isle Havnor and through the inmost sea to Roke, was his first voyage. Only in these last few weeks had he seen lands that were not his own homeland, become aware of distance and diversity, and recognized that there was a great world beyond the pleasant hills of Enlad, and many people in it. He was not yet used to thinking widely, and so it was a while before he understood. "Where else?" he asked then, a little dismayed, for he had hoped to bring a prompt cure home to Enlad.
"In the South Reach, first. Latterly, even in the south of the archipelago, in Wathort. There is no more magic done in Wathort, men say."
"It is hard to be sure."
"That land has long been rebellious and piratical, and to hear a southern trader is to hear a liar, as they say. Yet the story is always the same. The springs of wizardry have run dry."
"But here on Roke?"
"Here on Roke we have felt nothing of this. We are defended here from storm and change and all ill chance. Too well defended, perhaps. Prince, what will you do now?"
"I shall go back to Enlad when I can bring my father some clear word of the nature of this evil and of its remedy."
Once more the Archmage looked at him, and this time, for all his training, Arryn looked away. He did not know why, for there was nothing unkind in the gaze of those dark eyes. They were impartial, calm, compassionate. All in Enlad looked up to his father, and he was his father's son. No man had ever looked at him thus. Not as Arryn, Prince of Enlad, son of the ruling prince, but as Arryn alone. He did not like to think that he feared the Archmage's gaze, but he could not meet it. It seemed to enlarge the world yet again around him, and now not only Enlad sank to insignificance, but he himself, so that in the eyes of the Archmage he was only a small figure, very small, in a vast scene of sea-girt lands over which hung darkness. He sat picking at the vivid moss that grew in the cracks of the marble flagstones, and presently he said, hearing his voice, which had deepened only in the last couple of years, sound thin and husky, "And I shall do as you bid me. Your duty is to your father, not to me," the Archmage said. His eyes were still on Arran, and now the boy looked up. As he had made his act of submission, he had forgotten himself, and now he saw the Archmage, the greatest wizard of all Earthsea, the man who had capped the Black Well of Fundour and won the Ring of Aerith Akbi from the tombs of Atwan, and built the deep-founded sea wall of Nep, the sailor who knew the seas from Astowel to Celador, the only living dragon lord. There he knelt, beside a fountain, a short man and not young, a quiet-voiced man, with eyes as deep as evening. Arran scrambled up from sitting and knelt down formally on both knees, all in haste. "My lord," he said, stammering, "let me serve you." His self-assurance was gone, his face was flushed, his voice shook. At his hip he wore a sword in a sheath of new leather, figured with inlay of red and gold, but the sword itself was plain, with a worn